Welcome to the No Fungi, No Future podcast. In these episodes, we interview experts in the field to gain a deeper understanding of the magical and mysterious networks of mycelia that are all around us, to learn how they impact our lives and the planet. In this episode, we have the first part of our interview with Mark Speer. Mark is lab director at RMS Fungi. In this episode, we learn about his career journey cultivating mushrooms and experiences helping hundreds of mushroom farms around the world. We also discuss some of the fascinating science behind growing cordyceps. Thank you, Mark, for doing this interview with us. In the beginning of the interview, I was wondering if we could talk a little bit about your career journey. You know, tell us a bit about what sparked your interest initially in learning about all things fungi. How did you get to the place you are now?
Okay, Rebecca and I were at school, and we're studying botany. I've always kind of been techno, and she's always been natural, and that seemed like a good fit for us to have a career together. And we met this inspiring professor. He was, you know, he's just great. In my college, he taught in my ecology class, which at the time was mostly mushrooms in the field, and it was fascinating. And so we started to take that, and he had a lab. Since he was a field guy, he didn't use his lab, and he gave us the keys. We're undergraduates. He gave us the keys to his lab, and we started to mess around. And actually, we were started by growing Pleurotus, just like everybody does, and we got hooked.
So this was in the lab. You kind of got hooked, or
yeah. Tell us a bit. I've always been a lab guy. Rebecca's the person who'll be out, you know, communing with the daisies, and I'll be in the lab, you know, trying to clone them.
Yeah, and so how did that grow? Like you started growing them in the lab, and then what happened?
Right. Well, we did that for a couple of years, in aside from having jobs and also attending classes, and I started to get work in laboratory work for professors around the campus, and I discovered that there was actually a whole department in Pennsylvania where they did research on cultivating mushrooms. That's Penn State, and at the time it was, you know, arguably one of the best places in the world to go if you wanted to study mushrooms. So I went there and discovered the whole world of cultivated mushrooms, which is a moderate size interest. It is like a billion pounds in the US grown every year, and discovered it was a place not only we could do something interesting, we could make a living and do something worth doing. And that's how I got into it. Then from school, we got recruited out into a giant mushroom grower, and we worked for them for years. And then we went from there to making mushroom spawn. Mushroom spawn is like the seed material. It's all, you know, sterile culture stuff, which I just love that. We did that for 28 years, and then we went independent. And now we have clients on, you know, US, North America, Europe, and beyond that we advise.
So tell me a bit more about mushroom spawn. Like what is the process for getting that?
Mushroom spawn is agricultural biotechnology, which is so cool. So it's a little bit, you're growing food, but you're actually growing what the farmers will plant. And of course, you know, the margins are good, but it is sterile work done in clean suits, done in clean rooms, done with large industrial sterilization equipment. And it's that bridge between actually making food and playing with science. It's a blast.
Why does it have to be so sterile? What's going on there?
Well, if you're growing mushrooms, you want to grow the mushroom you want and not all the other fungi in the world. So you have to do everything you can to only get, you know, what you want. If your spawn is contaminated, it'd be like, let's say you wanted to grow apple trees, but you planted carrot seeds. You're not going to get apples. So we have to. So the spawn makers have to deliver what they call azenic, no foreign organisms material to the mushroom growers, so that they can then grow it.
Right. Okay. And so that's kind of been your focus. You said for 28 years is sort of getting this spawn perfect, kind of to give.
You know, since I was doing that, and I was, you know, kind of getting my chops and working with some of the best people in the field, it started to be that when mushroom farmers were having trouble, especially if they're having trouble with crop diseases, they wanted a techie, And so my bosses would rent me out like a mule to whatever mushroom farm was having trouble, and to try to help them. And I've made over 200 and what I think last count 220 trips to different mushroom farms on every continent in
Wow.
17 countries to try to see what's going on and see if I could help them. And some were in very bad shape. You know, farmers don't ask for help if it's a little problem. Farmers only ask for help if it's a big problem. And of course, if they're having trouble, they can't pay us for our spawn, right? So it's in everybody's interest to go help them. And that was hugely educational. It was great. You know, the way they do it in New Zealand is not that similar to the way they do it in the Netherlands. You learn a lot by going to compare them. So.
But are these labs you're saying that are not that similar,
Oh, they're
or
mushroom farms
mushroom
that would
farms?
buy our product, but we're having trouble, you know, with their process. Mushroom farming is not like row crop farming. You know, it's all indoors. It's all done in, well, 98% of it. I mean, there's a few people that do it outdoors, like shiitake growers, but 98% of it is done in controlled environments, carefully built and purpose run farms. So.
Are there some species that you found that are much more difficult than others? And if so, I'm curious
There's some
why.
things that are just darn impossible. You know, there's 100,000 mushrooms, of which we can grow a dozen, you know, maybe 20. And some have very complicated lifestyles. Some require absolutely 100% obligately require the presence of living tree roots to grow. You know, they're symbiotic. And some of the best mushrooms, best eating mushrooms in the world are like that, which makes them very difficult to grow under normal conditions. You have to start by growing an orchard and then growing the fungi on the trees in the orchard. And every time you do that next level of abstraction, the costs go up, the yield goes down, and the reliability of the crop gets less.
Can you tell me a little bit about cordyceps? Because I understand it's, you've written a paper on it, and I know historically, like, you had to be some super rich guy to get it from the Himalayas and stuff like that. But what's
Yeah.
going on there? What's the story?
Cordyceps is cool because it's one of the very few fungi that are actually entomopathogenic, which means it actually grows on dead caterpillars. You know the movie The Last of Us?
I've seen a bit of it.
The cordyceps was actually the inspiration for that movie. It's not like there's anything like that that grows on animals or humans or anything like that. But when a caterpillar dies, the cordyceps will grow on the corpse and produce fruiting bodies. The food for like say white agaricus mushrooms, I mean that's straw and that kind of stuff. But the food for the cordyceps is bugs, dead bugs. And now, you know, we
And
don't
is
keep
cordyceps the only one that does that?
no, it's just
Oh,
one
the
of the few
festival.
that makes an edible fruit body. You know, fungi delete in fact, if you ever see a dead fly on a window screen, if you look really carefully, you'll see that that fly is sprouting little fine wisps of mycelium, little fine wisps of fungi around it. And if it wasn't for fungi, this isn't figurative, we literally would be drowned in bug corpses and tree, you know, fungi degrade everything. And if it wasn't for fungi, we wouldn't have a viable ecosystem, which is a whole nother subject and part of the reason why I like fungi. But anyway, cordyceps, since it grows on bugs, you have to make a media that it likes. You have to make it, you know, feel at home. And Rebecca, who's sitting right behind me carefully, made some wonderful intuitive leaps about how you could make a medium that would be friendly to the organism. And her media were extremely productive, more than anybody's ever seen. You know, the
I'm curious,
artist,
how do you go from dead
scientist.
caterpillars to a medium that's friendly?
Well, what's in a caterpillar, right? I mean, there's some protein and some oil and some of this and some of that. You know, you can get an analysis of anything online if you're patient. Then you conceptualize, you know, how do you keep your cat comfortable? You understand enough about your cat to know what it likes. How do you keep your cordyceps comfortable? The same thing.
And then, I mean, historically, it had only been in the Himalayas with caterpillar.
Well,
Or
this
is there more
particular,
to it than that?
yeah, I mean, insects have chitin exoskeletons. Chitin is a very tough And you'll see more and more chitin as humans get better at making it. It's a wonderful polymer. You know, it most of the things that we make now out of plastic, you could make out of chitin, and it would be better. It's a naturally generated material. It's very hard to degrade, but fungi can do it. And specifically, cordyceps. So pretty much any time any insect falls anywhere in the world, a fungus is going to degrade it. But this particular fungus produces a fruit body that contains some very interesting, I'm going to call them medicinal compounds. That's not quite the right word. They're probably nutraceutical compounds, you know, more technically. And those are the ones that got to be famous for their, you know, very remarkable effect. The mushroom itself is not delicious. You know, you would eat it. And traditionally, the people that have, you know, used it for thousands of years, they dry it and then they make a drink out of it that isn't specifically flavored like cordyceps. It's flavored like whatever else they put in it, and the cordyceps is there for health.
We hope you enjoyed this episode featuring our conversation with Mark Spear. Be sure to look out for our next episode coming out soon, where we will continue this conversation. Until then, be sure to get some healthy mushrooms into your diet. Also, please take a moment to like and subscribe to our channel and drop us any comments. Your feedback is most welcome. Thanks for listening.